Welcome to Headlines. This is Ari Wasserman sitting in for David Lichtenstein. Today we have a very important topic, very informative topic, very relevant topic. If you are a boy or a girl in Shiduchim, if you have a child in Shiduchim, if you have a son, a daughter in Shiduchim, if you have a grandson, granddaughter in Shiduchim, if you know anyone in Shiduchim, this show, this topic is for you. We are going to be talking about how much should be researched before agreeing to a Shidduch, and in particular, how comfortable do we need to be before saying yes. So we're going to talk about the specific questions as follows: what's researched in advance by the parents, and what's left for the boy and the girl to figure out themselves, what specific questions should be asked, what can't be asked, what must be asked, how do you ask, who should you ask, and so much more. We are going to be speaking with four experts in this area. We are going to start out with the great Posek, Rabbi Moshe Mordechai Lowy, who is the Rav of the Agudas Yisrael of Toronto. He has written extensively on our topic, the issues of research, how much research, what's considered Lashon Hara, what's L'Toeles. We are going to then move on to Yerushalayim and speak with Rabbi David Kaplan, the Mashkiach Ruchani of Yeshivas Beis Yisrael. He has written extensively on our topic. He's written two books on Shalom Bayis alone, so we will have great insights from him. We will then move to the United States of America, Florida, and speak with Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg. He's the senior rabbi of the Boca Raton Synagogue. He has lectured and continues to lecture extensively on our topic. He has some very interesting insights. And then we'll move up north in the United States of America to Mrs. Lisa Tursky, the therapist, the author, the Nefesh board member, who also has important and unique insights to our topic. But before we go to our guests, we are first going to hear a clip from Rabbi Moshe Hauer, who's the executive vice president of the Orthodox Union. We had Rabbi Hauer on a show a year and a half, 2 years ago, talking about quick divorces. Why are people getting divorced quickly after a marriage? It could be a month, 2 months, weeks, a year, 2 years. And he quoted a friend of his right on topic for us today. That wasn't exactly the topic back then, related back then, but this clip was perfect for our show today. And Rabbi Hauer quotes a friend of his who says, extensive research is absolutely necessary before agreeing to Shidduch. So here's the clip with Rabbi Hauer, and we'll get back to you shortly after this clip.
I have a friend who says something that sounds extreme, and I'm telling you in advance that it sounds extreme, but on reflection, it's very, very wise. He says that before his child goes out with anybody, he feels that 90% of the work is done. All that's left is to see if they actually are going to like each other. Now, that sounds kind of extreme, and the person does not have short dating periods for their child. They want them to have a chance to see that they really like each other, that they can work together, that they have a dynamic between them. But what the person is saying is that it behooves the family, it behooves him as a parent, to make sure that the person that his child is seeing is safe, is someone who's going to be a strong, loyal, healthy, consistent spouse. There's no way that can be discovered by those meetings that the couple are going to be having with each other, by the dates themselves. That requires a look at the broader context of the person's life. And that's homework. That's homework that the people have to do, not silly homework, you know, the small trivial things that we sometimes satire, that people look into when looking for a shidduch, but the really, really important things. That assessment of the health of the person needs to happen outside of the actual dating process.
So Rabbi Hauer, you're not on live, but it's always great to hear you. Thank you so much. I do just want to voice a concern. Obviously, I agree. I agree we need to do research. We need to do a lot of research. We need to do focused research. We need to research important issues. But on the other hand, there is also a competitive concern if we do too much research and we find out certain things that may or may not be correct. And even if correct, maybe they're not so significant. It could be that we are passing up on shidduchim. We are nixing shidduchim that otherwise may have led to happy marriages. So indeed, we have two competitive needs here between the concept of research. It would be negligent to not research, but on the other hand, we don't want to get in the way of the powerful siyata dishmaya that we see in shidduchim. So indeed, we're going to have to talk about that on this show, what's the balance? Is there such a thing as doing too much research? And if so, then indeed we could be passing up on what otherwise would have been some beautiful shiduchim. I just want to mention also in this regard, we received an email a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, here at Headline, somebody discussing this issue, and he did voice concerns about doing too much research. He said, I understand it was that based on that show, The Quick Divorce or so, people may not be doing enough research, we said, but he disagreed, and he said people are actually doing too much research in advance. He says as follows, the solution to not knowing a person well enough is not more research and references, but actually getting to know the person better, more time dating in various settings. And he continues to enable this, only a minimal background check should be done. So he said, don't do a lot of research, meet the person, see the person, because resumes and references promote the creation of facades. It's not effective. And in fact, it backfires just looking at papers and talking with references. You need to meet and experience each other in different settings. And that was his Eitzah. He did have another comment. I think it's a very valid comment. He says that the better connected people are, the more effective they will be in researching. If you're well connected, the system will work for you. However, those who are less connected, they really do struggle to find out reliable information. I agree with that. Really important insight. Now, before we go to our guest, we'll have our riddle of the week. This riddle does not relate to a specific parsha. The fact, it relates to the entire Chumash, and the question is as follows. If you look throughout the Chumash, you'll be able to find letters, the letters of the Aleph Beis next to each other. So, for example, you'll find an Aleph next to a Gimel and a Ches next to a Yud. You'll find all the letters back to back with another letter. There is one exception, that we have two letters in the Aleph Beis that will never be next to each other, and the question is, which of those two letters, and the explanation as to why they are not next to each other. Now, let's go to our guests.
To leave a message, call 732-806-8700 and press number 2, or email at info@headlinesbook.com.
Joining us now is Rabbi Moshe Mordechai Lowy. Rabbi Lowy is the Rav of Agudas Yisrael of Toronto. He is a major posek in North America, and he has additionally written extensively on the issues we are discussing today, disclosures during Shiduchim. Rabbi Lowy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and it's a real pleasure and kavod for me to be part of this, because Shiduchim are such a great mitzvah, and every family that knows that, where there are people who have a hard time buying Shiduchim, and there's so many thousands have a hard time, and it's the biggest mitzvah. My Rebbe, Avgon Reb Chaim Steinzichon Brachu, when his son, the young son, was Nipter, he, at the Kaver, he said, go up to Shemayim and daven for all those girls who can't find Shiduchim. To him, it was bothering him so much that in the day of his biggest loss, that's what he was concerned about. So anyway, so Shiduchim are something, anything we could help to facilitate a Shiduch, or Chas V'Sholem, if it shouldn't happen, and to help a family not to go through the traumas and of divorce and family contention. So it's a big mitzvah. So it's very important. Today's session is very important. And just the halacha is that Chofetz Chaim Paskins, Chofetz Chaim was the one who was so much against Lashon Hara. And he says, but when it comes to Shiduchim, it's a chiv. It's not only Shiduchim, but Gomshutvus, to go and try to find out before you get involved. Because if you don't find out, and he has rayas from the Gemara, that because if you don't find out, Chas V'Sholem, it brings to Riv and Motzo and Chil Hashem. So there's a chiv. And it's not only, it's a good advice, it's a chiv that's part of the shtadlus, to go to try to, before you go into a shuduch, especially Hasidic shuduchim, where they don't even have dates. The whole thing is only inquiries first. But even regular shuduchim, too, before you're just going out on dates, you really don't find out who the person is. So it's very important to, and no one should feel guilty inquiring. You should feel guilty not to speak Lashon Hara. And the main rule to remember is there's no heter to speak Lashon Hara for Shiduchim. It means there's not a heter carte blanche that you're allowed to speak Lashon Hara for Shiduchim. There's a heter you're allowed to speak Lashon Hara to Elis if it's the purpose to help a Shiduch or save a tragedy. then it's a mitzvah. But anything else that doesn't help to build a beautiful home and to help save from a destructive home, there's no, you're not allowed to go just to find out everything that happened to the person from the day he was born until now, the day she's born, is usur. It's only, you're only allowed to find out pertinent information to know about the shidduch.
So Rabbi Loi, along those lines, so today's topic is specifically finding out information, making the inquiries, and you have graciously agreed to come back for a second time to discuss those who received the calls, the inquiries, to respond, how to respond. So as the Rav said, we are focusing on making the inquiries and the requirement based on the Chafetz Chaim that we have to inquire so there are no problems down the road. So we want to inquire. Some people inquire a little, some people inquire a lot. So fundamentally, is there anything that is off limits when investigating a shidduch? Let's say it's pertinent, but is there anything, if somebody's in the shidduch market, is there any right to privacy or anything that's pertinent? I can find out, I can investigate, drisus v'chakiros, I can find it out directly, indirectly. Is there any right to privacy when somebody is looking for a shidduch?
I mean, there is a right of privacy. It means, let's say you're investigating a shidduch and you found out something already that's, you're not, because of that, you're not going to pursue the shidduch. You're not allowed to go ask any more information. You already decided, like you heard one piece of information, which made you decide not to go ahead. That's it. Goodbye. You're not allowed to go find out anything more. And not say, look, I want to find out more things. So if you already decided you're not going to do it, there's no effort to find out more. The only thing, and to find out things that aren't pertinent to for building a home, suppose you don't have to find out, you know, what kind of clothing was he wearing when he was 5 years old, or, you know, things, stupid things, you know, do they use plastic dishes, they don't use, and things that have nothing to do really with building a beautiful home, and, you know, and people go find out, you know, what did the grandfather do, what did the grandmother do, if things that have nothing to do with the beautiful home, there's no heter to find it out. But there's no issur finding out, and you can't say because of privacy. You're allowed, because that's halacha, because you're saving a Jewish home by finding out, and everyone knows when it comes to duchim, it's automatic. It's just like hefker bezen hefker. You know that people are going to find out, and people are going to look, and they're allowed to look. You know that's what the part of life is, and no one could say that you have no right to find out about me.
So, for example, if I really want to go in depth to find out, let's say I have somebody has a daughter and they're looking into a boy and they hear he's a serious learner and he kind of gets to minyan on time. And that's something that's very important for the girl. Can you hire like a private investigator to get the facts, or even maybe more simpler would be find a bachur in the yeshiva and have him trace, have him shadow the boy, we can call him a cloney, and to really find out the facts. Is he showing up on time to minyan, early to minyan? How does he interrelate with other people in his interactions? Is that going to be an acceptable thing to find somebody to really get firsthand knowledge rather than relying on the friends of Plony who may or may not give accurate information?
It's probably, it's good advice to try to find out information besides the people on their resume, because usually the people on the resume are people that, you know, are friendly with him, and somebody on the resume should really not be the one giving bad information. You know, like a lot of times I get these calls, the people say that everything's going good, all of a sudden when they call the people on the resume, they say no. And they want to find out who is the one who's spoiling all the shidduchim. If you put on a resume, you know they're not put there to give bad information. And if you feel you want to give bad information, make sure you're not on the resume. You don't be on the resume for that person. You know, you're not, person is not put on a resume to ruin the shidduch. Unless something is really objective, you know something really wrong. You know, that we're going to discuss in the second half. But the only problem with hiring a private investigator, just imagine if the other side finds out that you hired a private investigator, you know, it doesn't look so good. But if you do it, as long as it's done proper. And also the problem with investigators, you don't know everything exactly what's happening. You know, sometimes you think look one way. That's one of the main rules of Talos in by Shidduchim. You really have to know what's really happening. You know, a boy didn't come to Dam today. Maybe it just happened, you know, and putting the investigator came that day, And he didn't come to daven because he had a stomachache. You know, you write down, he didn't come to daven today. So really, you know, if you really want to find out, you have to make sure that the information is accurate and give the rules. Don't exaggerate them. Tell me exactly what you saw. And then you have to decipher and see what really happened. You know, the boy didn't come to Seder today. Oh, wow, he misses Seder every day. And you speak to other people, you'll say every day he comes, he's always there exactly on time. So you have to be very careful, even if you hire an investigator, it should be somebody who understands and knows the halachas of Lashon Hara, and knows that you don't just say everything you see, and knows that you have to only pinpoint things that really will help.
Right, so when planning who to call, obviously there are the people on the resume, and the people, as the Rav mentioned, the people that aren't on a resume may give more accurate information. Is there anyone I'm not allowed to call? For example, if I hear that the family that Plony is from got in a fight with their neighbors, or his father had a business dispute with somebody, or if we're talking about a second marriage, obviously to call the ex-spouse to find out if there were serious issues that you have to know about. So is there anyone that you're not allowed to call? Or again, is it all fair game and those may be the best people to call?
Yeah, the Chofetz Chaim writes that, you know, like we said, that there's no heter speaking Lashon Hara for Shiduchim. There's a heter speaking Lashon L'Toelus. Means Lashon Hara is always Osir. Lashon L'Toelus is Lashon Toiv. You're speaking for Shiduch, it's L'Toelus. If you're speaking out of vengeance, if you're speaking because you want to say something derogatory, because now is a good time for me to get back at that person. The person, you know, always, whenever I needed something, they didn't want to help me. They always, you know, like let's say a girl in class was always snobbed, and someone asked information about a girl, she's going to say the truth, but she's going to say it out of vengeance, not out of Ellis. So you're Oivel if Neiver speaking to them. So Chofetz Chaim says, first of all, you're Oivel if Neiver because they're going to make them speak Lashon Hara, because they're not going to speak Lashon to Ellis, they're going to speak Lashon Hara. And second of all, if you do have something against the other person, for sure, there's going to be some information that's not going to be accurate. Because, that you know, we're human beings and our emotions control us. And, you know, you add a little and you add a little, and you're surely going to say things that aren't true. So the halacha is you're not allowed to speak to, ask somebody. Let's say if someone is going on a second, you know, second marriage, and you want to go find out from the ex, you want to find out about, you know, that's the wrong person to ask. Unless you know that it was a very clean divorce. They're all open about each other and they don't have anything against each other, and which is very rare, very rare. But in a regular case, in a divorce or a broken shidduch, let's say you know a shidduch was broken. So I'll find a call up. Why did you break the shidduch? So the best thing is to speak to a Rav who was involved or somebody who is not emotionally involved and find out, you know, but to speak to the person themselves is also because the person is surely going to speak out of vengeance or out of other reasons, and that's also. And also, they might embellish and say other things that aren't true.
So, what if I call? I need to call such a person. They're the only source of information, or I call the Rav, let's say, who was involved, and or whoever it may be. I call an irregular inquiry. And the person starts speaking what would not be L'Toelus, it would be Lashon Hara. Do I have to say right then, please don't speak Lashon Hara, stop right there, can I handle it a different way?
You sure do. Halacha is, because Lashon Hara is Aser. And like we said in the beginning, you're only allowed to, the second you decide you're not going to do it, you're not allowed to even continue speaking about it. And that's one of the conditions the Chofetz Chaim says, before you go ask information, you have to be upfront and say that I'm asking this information for a shidduch purpose. You can't just go snoop. You know, even though snooping, you can find out better things, you know, because if someone is on guard, they'll be careful what they say. But it's also to do that, because if you go to a person who doesn't realize that you're doing it for Tuelo's purpose, and then you just go, let's speak Lashon Hara. You go over to a guy, you know, speak about boys or girls, and you want to find out the real scoop about people. And you cause, and the person is not speaking Lashon Hara, so he's speaking Lashon Hara. So you either listen to Lashon Hara, to make the person. So the first thing before you speak, you have to be makdim and say, I'm asking this for a Tuelos degree reason. So, and let's say you're speaking to somebody and someone's starting to tell you something about Tuelos. Say, look, really, I don't want to hear Lashon Hara. But here, let's say someone started saying something about somebody. He said, you know, really, I want to find out about the person. I want you to know that I don't want to hear Lashon Hara. I'm asking for Tuelos. So even in the middle of a conversation, you could change or make it. It shouldn't be a Lashon Hara. But only Lashon Tuelos is mutter. So the person has a second reason. If you don't preface your questions by saying that it's for shidduchim, you know, when it comes to Lashon Hara, people say things that they really aren't careful with their tongue. They say extra things that they wouldn't even say. If they know that every word they say is really listened to, they'd be very careful. Sometimes, there's a girl, let's say, but on the girl, she's a nerd. And right away, but if she knows that she's speaking about a shidduch, she wouldn't use that phrase because she knows, you know, she's not really a real nerd that you shouldn't do a shidduch. It's just, you speak Lashon Hara, you say nerd, a bum, and you say things. So that's why you have to preface your question and say, I'm doing it with Tuelis. I want to do a shutvus to the person. I want to do a shidduch with the person.
Now, what would fall into the basket of Tuelis and what would fall into the basket of Lashon Hara? Because I can imagine that there's a lot of gray in between those two.
It means anything that that's objective. Let's say you want to know, is the person really erlich, really prum? Is the person really careful? One Rosh Hashiva once said that he holds that any bacher that oivas my krishma is not a Yerushalayim. A bacher, I know it's very hard to say because a lot of bacher never don't realize the avera of being oivah. But he held that, he was the person who always spoke highly about every person. But he felt the bacher, Masbabi, he felt this bacher should know better. He knows the Isra of Oiv is my Krishna. And they asked information, he said he's not a Yerushalayim. And so, things that you want, that really are you want to know if someone's Erlich, someone has good midos, you know, does he always lose his cool? Does he cause a big ruckus? Is he somebody that's a mensch, that's always nice to people, good to people? And things, but to find out, you know, what does he eat for breakfast? Or, you know, does he eat fast or slow? Or things like that, which really aren't negeya, you know, only things that are really negeya to see, could I build a beautiful Jewish home with that person? Or can my child build a beautiful Jewish home with that person? Would it be a good home, a Torah home, an Erlich home? A midas diga home, that's the only thing you allow. But anything else that's not really in a geya, you shouldn't find out. Yichus, you're allowed to find out about Yichus. The B'chon of Asman said that those are the three things you're allowed to speak about. There's Yichus and Torah and Yerushalayim. That's the three things, midas. Yerushalayim's midas. You're allowed to find out, you know, Yichus. You know, somebody called me last week and asked me this shaila that somebody was adopted. Does the person have a chiv to reveal that the person was adopted? That sure, if you don't know the yichas of the person, you know, adaptive, you know, they converted the person. And so the person has to know and make the decision, do they want to do a shidduch with somebody you don't know the yichas? No, so that's something that surely should be said. But anything else that just to find out every little thing that the person did is also.
So it sounds like we're defining what would be l'toelis as what is pertinent. And what is not Litoelis, what would be Lashon Hara, is not pertinent, not significant, not relevant.
Right.
Okay, very good. So the Rav mentioned before that the Chofetz Chaim talks about the requirement, the need to do an investigation. So what's the minimum research that's required by halacha? And also, if it's not that much, what would the Rav advise people to ideally do when doing their investigations?
I mean, the ideal thing is to do normal things and not abnormal things. You know, you don't go call the kindergarten teacher from 20 years ago. And, you know, like this time, many times this happens, you know, people grow up, you know, and they change. And, you know, this even happens. Somebody was a Rebbe in the Sifta, and then later on, or a teacher in the seminary. And later they became mature and they're a completely different person. So the natural, you ask people who learned with him or learned with her, her teachers who know her, and the teachers have to make sure they give the right information about the right person. Anyone you give information, but that's why you have to preface that you're asking for shidduch and you want to make sure that's done properly. My Rosh Hashiva, Goren Bar Mochaim, Levin Zuchayim Brachot, every time he had a child on the market, he used to give me a call in Toronto. He said, look, I have a child on the market. I'm doing my ishtadlus. You know, the halacha is that there's two things that you need by shidduch. Azois yispal kol adam, you have to daven. It's very important. The daven say, kapitel kuf chafalot, the kapitel that Yaakov Avinu said when he went to find the shidduch. You know, it's this inyan to say it. They say, right, if someone needs a shidduch, they should say it at the end of Shemoneh Esrei before. To take the three steps, say kapitel kuf chafalot. Esein ha'arim, ma'an yovi ezri, ezri mim ha'ashem, ois ha'shmayim ha'aretz, ha'ezra my spouse is from Hashem. So it's important to daven. And also, you have to do ishtadlus, like the Baruch Hashem told, it says, koshes v'un kriyas yamsuf. Kriyas yamsuf, they daven, and Hashem said, just go, be so. Do something. You have to do ishtadlus. You can't just say, stand and... So if you don't do proper ishtadlus means normally you call a shatchanim from that place. You don't have to call every shatchan every place in the world, and you shouldn't maybe a nudge. Shatchanim sometimes get very, very angry when someone calls them again and again and again. But you should try to call at least a shatchan once a day. It could happen just that day that you called the shatchan. Pung that day, someone came with a shidduch, and Hashem, you know, many times happens. I remember one Rebbe, you know, the Masifta had hundreds of applicants, and he called up and he got the job because he just called in the right time, the right place. Vayis show. The normal ishtadlus is a chiv to do. It means normally ask the bachim around, saying, no, I'm not going to ask anybody. If Hashem wants it, it's bashert. It's not true. You have to do your ishtadlus. And sometimes a lot of people get very hurt by not doing their ishtadlus. And so, but normal ishtadlus, you don't have to call every babysitter and every, you know, what happened. You know, normal ishtadlus is friends, people, the neighbors, and rebbeim, teachers, you know, who know them. They must have been better than the principals. And it's people that you think will know them and will tell you the truth and where you could really find out. And that's what the Banshim wants us to do, that because the Banshim doesn't want a shidduch. Banshim will make you find out something that you should stop the shidduch. And if the Banshim wants a shidduch, my Zaydi used to say, he was a big grub and hungry, when a right shidduch comes, you put on holtz and a brill, you put on wooden glasses, you don't see any faults. So the Banshim, but you do your normal shidduch, the Banshim will make you find out what you should find out. And the Banshim, for some reason, does make you find out, means it's basher. But the normal shidduch, the person should do.
Uh-huh. So we've done the ishtadlus. Things are looking good. The sides agree to go out to the shidduch, to go on a date. Now, dating, how many times? Whatever it is, based on various minhagim, is it 2 times, 6 times, 20 times? It doesn't matter. Sitting in a hotel or doing activities like that, you're still going to miss a lot. So my next question is, should you, the boy, the girl, try to set up a situation that you can really see each other in other circumstances, stressful circumstances? Life is stressful. Things comes up, bumps in the road. Hey, the example would be in Eretz Yisrael, do you take the girl, the boy out to Osherad shopping, which could be a fairly stressful situation, especially right before Chagim. So should we try to set up a situation like that to effectively test the other people? I once saw a tshuva about somebody who was concerned that his or her maid was stealing. And what he did was he put a $100 bill on the dining room table and he had a camera watching. Now, there's a shaila of leaf naiver. Maybe you're setting the person up and they're going to steal because of you. But here we don't have a leaf naiver issue so much. So is that advisable to really try to analyze the person properly in different situations?
I mean, it's advisable, even though you can't find out everything about a person, really, you know, even with everything. But what you're doing is you're giving it a chance that Rabbi Shalom will want to stop it. You'll be able to see something. I mean, we know Shidduch is 100% Hashem. So, you know, the way we look at it, that we are the ones doing it, really, Hashem is doing everything. We have to do our part. Our part is to find out, because Hashem wants us to find out. And if there's a way to find out, does the person have a temper? You're not allowed to go put the person in a situation where you're really going to make the person very anxious and angry, and not in a normal situation, because then you're over neighbor, and this doesn't prove anything. But you're allowed to do the normal thing. You know, is the person, you wait for, let's say a girl is going out. You wait, is the boy going to open the door for me? Is he not going to? Is he going to bring me the coffee? Is he going to be stingy about what he brings? And he could see her, how she reacts. You know, does she say thank you? Does she, normal situations where you don't put a person in a predicament of doing things out of normalcy, but normal things. I know my wife was very impressed, you know, when I was the first time, wow, he opened the door for me, you know, but, you know, it's if you do, you know, here I look like a Chassidish guy, and here I opened the door for her, you know, so she was very impressed, you know, like, and normal things, that's things where you show your midos. Main thing about Shidduch are midos. Everything else really, if you are looking at everything, midos are the most, what you're looking for in Shidduch. If you have a spouse that has excellent midos, then everything will work out.
Rabbi Loi, I want to thank you for joining us today, and I definitively look forward to our next conversation on responding to Shidduch inquiries. So I look forward to that next conversation.
Thank you, Rabbi Wasserman, and it's a really big privilege and comfort for me to be on this this topic, and it's something that's really to my heart, and because last night I was at a Shabbat Brochus of a niece of mine who was a Shatchan, and I spoke about, well, you know, the schus that she's being a Shatchan together with her husband is the biggest schus. Every Shidduch that you bring into fruition is the biggest mitzvah. I have somebody in my Kehillah, a very big Talmud Chacham, he said he's so jealous of Shatchanim. So Shatchanim have become Shutfim. They're Shutfim with Rabbi Nishan. The Gemara Chazal say, what does Rabbi Nishan do all day? Yoyshev and Mzabig Zivugim. So anyone who does that work means he's doing it with Hashem, because really Hashem is doing it. So he's so jealous that he doesn't have the schus. You know, for some reason he wants a retchiduchim. It's a very good, anyone who can retchiduchim or can help shiduchim, it's the biggest mitzvah you could do. You're helping the person, you're helping the family. The Vilna Gaon, the only time he used to go collect money was by a shidduch of a Bas Talmud Chacham. That's when he used to go, because there's no greater mitzvah you could do is to bring a shidduch into fruition and bring the families together. So thank you, Rabbi Wasserman. Hashem should give you a nachas from all your children and all of it, anyone listening, and we should only hear Besoros Toivos by everybody.
Amen. Thank you, Rabbi Loi. Look forward to next time. Joining us now is Rabbi David Kaplan. Rabbi Kaplan is a senior lecturer at Or Sameach in Yerushalayim. He is also the Mashgiach Ruchani and a popular Rebbe at Yeshivas Beis Yisrael. He is a noted speaker, a prolific author, and he has written extensively on Shalom Bayis, and he actually lectures on Shiduchim as well. Rabbi Kaplan, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Very important subject to discuss. I look forward to it.
Oh, thank you so much. So Rabbi Kaplan, let me ask a personal question. Let me start like this. What's your rule of thumb as to how much research to do? I mean, you've probably done research many times for students and children. So how do you go about it?
First, I would say a lot depends on who's suggesting the shidduch. For example, one of our kids got married, my sister-in-law suggested the shidduch. So there wasn't a whole lot of research to do because we know her and we know how much we can trust her and what she's telling us, number one. Number two, it also depends on if you know something. Sometimes you find shidduchim with people that you already know and it gets kind of boring because it takes all the fun out of it. You don't get to do any investigation, you know, people that you might have known for 20 or 30 years. There's investigating the family and investigating the individual, you know, the either the son or the daughter who's been recommended. What I do suggest when it's a shidduch that is not a known entity is that the family has to determine it in advance at what point, how many questions do we need to ask. I had one situation, my daughter a bocher was recommended for my daughter. So I called a few people. My daughter said to me, you need to call more people. So I said, hold it. You know, if I call one more person, you can say you need to call somebody else. If I call another person, you can say, yeah, let's determine in advance how many people you want me to call. So we've got a pretty good picture. We know who recommended it. We know who the boy is. I've got a pretty good. Now, how much more do you need to know? What I would tell people is once you basically are satisfied in your own mind that you understand that you've got a good handle on what's going on, you don't need to just keep calling for the sake of calling.
Right. So decide up front and go. And then at a certain point, you're just going to say, we've done enough. And there's just not going to be that much more that we can find out by making the calls. And then you have to meet in person, I guess.
Right. And for that also, it's very much the same thing. When Bachram asked me, how many times should I go out? My or girls ask, how many times should I go out? The answer is you go out until there's no new data coming in, which in general is after three or four times. And you basically know to go out again just to have a good time, that's pointless. I know basically who this person is. We are human beings, as Rav Schuller or Shiva or Samev says, human beings are not logical. We are psychological. We get a pretty good sense and feel of people. And at that point, then I feel, listen, I know it's more of the same. At that point, it's time for a decision. Now making decisions aren't easy, but it's time for the decision.
So you're saying three or four times and then make a decision.
Three or four times is generally, look, with Bali Tshuvas, often people will say to go out a little bit more because there's more, you know, it's not the same, they're not coming from the same bed. When you talk about yeshivish people, about the worst, you know, the extent of what they've done is limited. With Bali Tshuvas, it could be ones at the skydiving and the other one has been into Zen. And, you know, so you may need you need more time. So, but for in the normal Yehemish yeshivish world where limited backgrounds, it's basically get a feel of the personality.
So Bali Tshuva are more interesting people then?
Are they more? Yeah, I'd say they're certainly more diversified. I don't know if they're more interesting. there's certainly more variation. We'll call it that.
Okay, fair enough. So we've decided how many people we're going to call. What do you ask them?
Okay, this is a vital part. One of the things that I ask, I tell parents when parents say, what should we? I get a call about a bacher, for example. A parent say, hi, do you know Reuven? I say, what my standard answer is, he's a wonderful boy. What would you like to know? And people are often baffled by that. They say, what do you mean? Can you just tell me about him? And the answer is, no, I'm not going to tell you about him because I don't know what you need to know. What if he has messy handwriting? Is that something that's really important over here? If he doesn't make it, if he doesn't take minions seriously, is that something on your priority list or not? I don't know what's important to you. So I tell the parents, please make a list of pointed questions. What percent does he take davening seriously? What percentage of time does he get to minion? If that's important to you, I'm not saying that this is something you should ask. You have to determine what's important to you. Is he the type of guy who will put time into his kids? Because he has to or because he wants to? Is she the type of girl who will be a at-home mom or does she really want to be outside of the home? Be as specific about the question. Not just, when you say, does he have good midos? You know, the usual, obviously, the first question. Does he have good midos? Well, you know, midos is very broad, right? He may be very refined and very controlled, but he isn't necessarily going to be the first guy to bring a meal to a sick roommate. So which midos are you looking for? So people generally, when they say midos, they mean refinement and reserve and refinement, which is true. But are you sure that's what you're looking for? So you have to be, the bottom line is be as specific as you can. Make up a list of specific questions.
And I would think very relevant also is who you're calling. We've decided we're calling X amount of people. We're going to decide on our priorities as to what to inquire about. But as we know, there are some people we call and they are effective in giving proper, accurate, and detailed information, and others that are somewhat useless. So how would you go about
it? Good. First of all, it's important, if possible, to speak to people in person, to go to the Rosh Yeshiva or to the Rebbe or to the Mashiach in person to see the look on his face. My own experience has been that when I ask pointed questions, I get straight answers. And I always recommend that you call people not necessarily who are on the, what do you call it, the resume, and you call the people that you feel. And I always tell parents, make sure to get a hold of a friend or a roommate, because a roommate knows a girl a lot differently than her seminary madrasha knows her or than her Ein Bayit knows her. And the Rosh Yeshiva knows a bacher one way, but his roommates know him another way. So you could ask the Rosh Yeshiva, is he a serious learner? Yes, but only the roommates will know, is he messy, is he average, or is he extremely tidy? Is he get along with people well? The Rosh Yeshiva may have one view of it, and the roommates have another view. The problem here is that what one person calls well, somebody else may not call well. Therefore, you have to try to narrow down the questions and be as specific as possible. Have you ever seen him in an argument? Have you ever seen a confrontation? Have you ever seen him bring a meal to a roommate? Have you ever seen him straighten out the svarim in the base medrash?
Now, have you had success, for example, when calling somebody on the resume friends? Has there ever been something that has surprised you by what they've said, or is it simply For the most part, they've got the same script. He's a wonderful boy. Hop him immediately. You can't
find him. I've had plenty of variation. There's been variation. And if you call, that's why it's important to hear what a seminary girl is saying or what her madricha is saying or what a Rosh Shiva is saying. I'll tell you one story that I had, which was an unplug, was my fault. I had a boy in Or Sameach many years ago, and he had gone out with a girl about 7 times. And I had spoken to the teachers, wonderful. Well, every time I said wonderful things. I called her roommate, and she said to me, she's a wonderful girl. She would do anything for anybody at any time. Now, as soon as she said that, a red light went off in my head because it sounded extreme. And it was my fault that I didn't pursue it further. Now, he went out with this girl about 7 times. They went away for a Shabbos together. And he told me before he's going away, he plans on proposing. They're probably going to finish it off. Motzei Shabbos, my phone rang. I had the phone off the hook before the first ring was finished. And he said to me, the whole thing is off. And I said, what happened? Because I was expecting to hear Mazel Tov. He said to me, the whole thing is off. It turns out she has a deep guilt complex because at one point in her life, she behaved in a way which was completely inappropriate in an office. And now she's gone to the extreme to make up for it. And that was my fault. Because as soon as I heard a roommate say she'd do anything for anybody at any time, that's not balanced. That's not balanced. And that's something that I got from her roommate. And I didn't get that from any of the madrichot or any of the teachers. They all said what they knew. They said she's a very nice girl, very fine girl, everything else. And therefore, it's extremely important to ask a range of people. If you want to know about a guy, for example, does he drink? Let's say a bocher, you want to know, nowadays alcohol has become a thing, as they say, right? Alcohol is a thing. You know, you could ask his Rosh Hashanah. He may not have seen him. May not have seen him ever drink. You ask his roommate, you know, does he hit the punch table at the chastas? Does he hit how hard does he hit the liquor table? Is he one of the top drinkers, major, or he doesn't drink at all? And ask a pointed question because Allah says they have to then give you a response. I'll tell you, a certain father called a Rosh Yeshiva up once about a bacher, and he said to him, can you tell me about, and I heard Reuven's a good boy, he's a good learner, he says an excellent learner, he's got a very good head, he's a big masvid. So the father said to him, would you say that he's honest? So the Rosh Yeshiva started hemming and hawing. You said, well, you know, he's, you know, I mean, I don't say that's not necessarily his strongest side. He said, Faza, one second, let's get this straight. It's my daughter you're talking about. Is this a boy who's straight or is this a boy who's sly and devious? Which says, well, I'll tell you the truth. He does have a very devious nature. He is sly. He's a good boy all around, but he's sly. He's always trying to deceive people. The father says, great, because my daughter is a deceiver and she needs somebody who's going to run circles around her. That's the boy that I want. Now, this is an extremely important lesson that when you're answering questions, don't help the Ribbono Shel Olam. Answer the questions honestly. Because if I had the Shiva tried to help the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Shidduch would never have happened.
I want to go back to something that you had just mentioned before about the roommate that she'll do anything for anybody. It seems to me that you have to pick up on very slight issues, very slight language issues. And that's not so easy to do when you're asking these reference calls. And I found that depending on who you're calling, they actually may speak in code. You know, if you're calling somebody of a different nationality, they try to make everything sound like roses, but they try to insinuate things that somebody who's American may not be able to pick up on when they're speaking in the code.
I don't know about you know, cultural differences or different countries, different nations. I'm talking about straight out Americans. First of all, we do pick up nuances in other, let's say, areas of life also. When you're trying to buy a car or you're ordering or you're shopping, we pick up plenty of nuances, number one. Number two, that's why the questions have to be very, very pointed. They have to be, you can't ask it. You have to, if you hear them talking around, here, one of the examples they always use, they say, well, does the bacher smoke? So the Rebbe will say, well, let's put it this way. He's not the first boy I would go to if I needed a cigarette. Okay. So you're telling me he smokes. Then my next question would be, is he a regular smoker? I want to know, does he smoke a pack a day? Does he smoke 4 packs a day? Or he smokes 3 cigarettes a day? I want to know now. I'm asking, and he's got an obligation to answer you. And sometimes if he says, well, I can't answer that, I don't want to answer, that also is an answer. But he's got an obligation to answer you if you ask a direct question. That's why I say the question with the minyanim is also. Some people say, does the boy go to minyan? And the answer there is yeah. And my next question is, what percentage of time does he make it to Shacharis? Not does he go to minyan. I go to minyan too. He may never go to Shacharis. We only go to Maariv. You know, what percentage? Be as specific as possible.
Right, right. So walk me through some of the interesting questions that you have received when people have called you for references. Because I understand that there are more straightforward, typical questions. And nowadays we ask questions like, do they use disposable kelim on Shabbos? So what have been some of the questions that you've been asked?
That's a great topic, I'll tell you. The first question I'm almost always asked, probably very high up on the list. It's not the first question. It's usually one of the first questions. Does the boy get angry? My response to that is always, yeah, don't you? That's always my response. And there's usually silence on the other end of the phone. I say, does the boy get angry? I say, yeah, well, do you know anybody who doesn't get angry? You know, there's kind of signs. I say, look, if you're asking me, does he have a violent, have I seen signs of a violent temper? And is he going to throw chairs at his wife? No, I have not seen any signs of that whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I've never even seen him angry. Are you asking me, does he get angry? I don't know any human being who doesn't. So let's get very clear what you're asking. Do I show any signs of, do I suspect he's going to be a type of an angry guy? No, he's generally not. He's very calm, pleasant, and I don't suspect that. But then again, life carried there. There are always surprises, and I can only tell you what I project. I had one, somebody once, this annoyed me. Somebody called me once about somebody in the neighborhood, about a very fine boy in the neighborhood, and they would start to ask me questions about the family. So they said, well, he's got this brother, that brother. He said, well, he's got a 9-year-old brother in fourth grade and in third grade, right? I said, yeah. He said, which cheder in the neighborhood does he go to? So I said to the guy on the phone, can I ask you a question? You know, in the broad picture over here, does it really matter in this shidduch over here? Is that really a game changer? Which one of the chador of the, you know? So he said to me, listen, when your kids are in shidduchim, you'll understand. That was before my own kids were in shidduchim. And I'll tell you the truth, I never asked that question. I never asked which cheder the 9-year-old brother goes to. Because frankly, I don't believe any family is perfect. I don't think my family is perfect. I don't think any other family is perfect. And if the meduber or meduberis, the candidate for the shidduch, checks out properly, then I'm very happy. I did have one mother called me up once, and she was asking me about the boy. And at a certain point, I said, do you want to tell me about your daughter? She didn't have to because I wasn't checking up. She said to me, well, my daughter is very smart. She has 3 degrees. And I said, as I cut her off, I said, well, you know, we all have challenges in life, and I'm sure she'll be able to overcome them if she works hard. So there's silence on the other end. She goes, what do you mean? I said, listen, if a girl's too smart, you know, that could be intimidating to most men. You know, I don't know. You have your girl. She goes, no, she's a very nice girl. She's a very nice girl. And in the end, she married a guy who's brilliant and runs circles around her. And she happens to be a very nice girl. And they have a very good marriage.
That's good. She found somebody. So it sounds like when you're researching, you're more concerned about the candidate as opposed to the family and extended family.
There definitely should be put more weight on that. There's definitely put more weight on the person. You know, the person is not here. I'll give you, my own son is married to a girl whose father has late stage Lou Gehrig's disease. So somebody suggested the shidduch. And he's in a state where he can't even use most state late stagers of Lou Gehrig's. They at least have eye movement where they could contact the computer screen. He's got even limited eye movement. Mm-hmm. And so when the shidduch came up, we checked out the girl first of all. The girl checked out. We had recommendations from a couple of people that we trusted, and we knew that everything sounded good. And I said to my son, look, I can't tell you what to do here. I can only tell you what it would involve marrying a girl whose father has late stage Lou, you know, has Lou Gehrig's disease. There are going to be certain pluses. The pluses being that the girl has learned to deal with ordeals. There's sort of going to be a certain maturity there. There are going to be certain challenges. It's going to, you know, obviously the obvious challenges. I said, I can't tell you what to do. If they told me that the father was in jail for fraud or that the father was a drug dealer, then I'd say, you know what, we're going to look elsewhere. If they told me that the Shalom Bayis in the family, I forgot to mention this before, the first question that I ask personally, how's the shalom bayis of the parents? Because a child is a product of his family. And if the shalom bayis isn't good, chances are it's affected the kid. And I don't want a kid coming from a home where there are shalom bayis issues. A girl whose father has an illness, you know, there are girls who, well, say she doesn't have a father at all. Maybe she's an orphan. That's not a pigam. That's something that an individual has to decide whether or not they want to get involved in such a thing with the various benefits and the various challenges. But where there are shalom bias issues, go ahead.
You'd really have to find the right person that would have that information to know that there's shalom bias issues in the family.
That's true. It's like any other investigation. In other words, I got a call the other day. I got a call yesterday or the day before. I don't remember which one it was. Somebody called me up to ask that a shidduch was recommended for a relative of hers. And she was told that the couple have serious shalom bias issues. They're in the same home, but living on different floors. That was one of the things that she had heard. And she asked me, it's her sister, it's her nephew that's involved over here, or niece or nephew, whichever one it was. She asked me, is she allowed to say this to the person? I said, but look, you're talking about a serious issue over here. At a minimum, you have to say, you must find a way to check the shalom bayis in that home. You'd be surprised. You know, there are people living on the block who I can tell you don't have any shalom bayis issues. There are other people living on the block I can tell you do have shalom bayis issues. And there are other people on the block I tell you, I'm not sure, but if I had a bet, I know what I would bet. So sometimes, yeah, there are things you can't know. There are things you can't know. Once in a while, there's a surprise. Most of the time, not.
Right. Let me ask you one last question, a little bit off the beaten track. You've got a son, you're doing research for him, and on the resume of the girl are her friends. And you call up and you're speaking with the friends and you say, this one sounds really intelligent and kind. And maybe I'm more interested in her than the girl I'm calling about. How do you handle that situation?
I actually had that situation with one of my own kids who is now married to the daughter, to the son of the lady who had called her originally about somebody else. And the lady spoke to my daughter on the phone asking her, and when she got home, she said, wow, she sounds like she'd be, you know, I think I might be interested in her. I don't remember what I think he went out with the other girl and didn't work. And she immediately went to find out about this girl, about what the woman happened to be my daughter. I don't think that it's a problem if I call somebody about Hannah and Bela sounds more interesting. I haven't committed to Hannah. I haven't made any commitment over here. What I would do is say, you know what? I think this sounds better. And I would try to find somebody who could perhaps set that up. That would be, there's nothing wrong with that unless you've made a commitment. You can't go and commit. I did have an incident once of a guy who I had chavrusas in the yeshiva, and they were both going out with the same girl at the same time. The girl went out with one of the boys, and she decided she wanted to compare to the other boy. And neither of them knew that they were best friends. They were best friends. They were chavrusas. And they were both going out with the same girl at the same time. And that did not end well for anybody in the triangle. They were no longer friends. Neither of them married the girl. And it was a very, very unpleasant situation. She was completely in the wrong, or whoever it was that was coaching her was completely in the wrong. That's downright unfair. That's an inappropriate, totally inappropriate. And while on the subject, by the way, the issue of pictures has also come up. It's in the news now. Shidduch pictures, which anybody with any Reach HaTorah knows that it's totally and utterly inappropriate. After all the excuses, it's totally and utterly inappropriate. So that's not the way of Kol Yisrael. But that was inappropriate. That was an inappropriate situation.
Actually, could have at least used different names for the two guys.
Yeah, it was not a good situation. And then the end of the story was that one who was really bruised more, one of them was bruised more than the other one. So he ended up getting engaged to somebody else. And I got an invitation to his wedding. His wedding was in Bnei Brak. So I went to Bnei Brak on the night of the wedding. And I get to the hall, and the hall was dark. And I thought maybe I was, because there were two halls in the same building, and I thought I was going to ride. The hall was dark, And as I turned to leave, I thought maybe I had the right date. I see the guy himself, and he's wearing just regular day clothing. He wasn't even wearing chop, you know, didn't look like a chassan. And he looked at me as I got, and Mamish, that I just gotten there when he was there. He was there collecting the check for the deposit because the engagement had broken off. He said, "Oh, I'm sorry, nobody told you about the engagement," which was a very awkward moment for me. But then he leaned over and whispered to me. But since then, he's met somebody else, and who he did end up marrying. So it was the engagement had broken off 3 weeks earlier. And then he met somebody and eventually got married. But again, I would just want to emphasize again for anybody who's listening that the most important thing is that the questions have to be clear, very, very specific. Even a seminary girl who does not have the maturity and is just always saying, "Oh, she's wonderful, she's terrific, everything else," you could ask her, you know, "You were a roommate, does she leave razor blades on the floor of the shower room?" You know, get as specific as possible.
Rabbi Kaplan, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you always joining us. Always a pleasure to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here. It's a big honor and a pleasure. I enjoy it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Joining us now is Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg. Rabbi Goldberg is the senior rabbi of the Boca Raton Synagogue, the largest shul in the southeast of the United States. He lectures and writes on numerous topics, including our topic of the day, Shiduchim and Shiduchim research. Rabbi Goldberg, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So Rabbi Goldberg, I'm going to start with the broad and most pointed question. Boy and girl, they were read to each other, and they want to do some research. And there's some research that's done up front, and there's some research that's done during dating, on the job. So what would you say, if we're going to categorize, what should be researched in advance before saying yes, and what should be delayed and let the couple figure it out themselves?
It's a great question. So let me just give a disclaimer even before I begin, which is important to share. I'm not an expert in anything, but I'm not an expert in shiduchim. I'm not a major shadchan. I'm certainly not a posek. I don't represent any das Torah. I'm just a simple rav who has, I hope, a little bit of common sense and gets a lot of phone calls about references, and grateful and glad to be able to help people be able to find their bashert, find their shidduch. And so I have some experience from that perspective. I'm not an expert in any sense. But to get to your question, you know, there are shadchanim who are extraordinary, and our Jewish world is deeply indebted to them, many of whom do it voluntarily from the goodness of their heart. They're dealing with a population that are not always easy to deal with. They persevere tenaciously in order to try to set people up. And we're all indebted to the shadchanim. But the system as a whole seems to have shifted enormously. And I've come to learn after the article that I published, I had a lot of correspondence with a lot of parents of singles, a lot of singles themselves, other rabbanim. And many of the singles have described that the system is very different today than it was, let's say, in your and my day, where many, many people were set up by people they knew. And who knew them and who knew the other party they were trying to introduce them to. So there was a certain level of trust. There was an implicit trust and assumption. You know me, you know what I'm looking for, you know what I look like, you know who I'm attracted to. And therefore, I may have some questions for you to make sure that no one's wasting their time. But essentially, I believe you're doing this because there's a level of knowledge between us. Today, where the system so heavily relies on shadchanim, both those for pay and voluntary, again, tremendous individuals. This is not a, God forbid, an attack or a criticism of them. But what happens is a young man recently emailed me and he told me, not such a young man who's been dating for a while. And he said, what will happen is I'll get a call from a shadchan. And the way he knows he needs to be suspicious and do research is that the shadchan will in one shot say to them, here are four girls I think might be good for you, and begin to list things about four girls. And he says, you can't even name three things about me, but you have four girls you're trying to get me to spend money, time, open up my heart, make myself vulnerable, have a sense of hope. So he therefore says we need more research than ever, not because we've changed, but because the system has changed and the assumptions that we can operate with have changed. And therefore, a person needs to do their due diligence because they're wasting time, they're wasting money, and most significantly, they're wasting emotional energy. And it could be in a very, very increasingly disappointing way. That gave me a new perspective on why maybe there's been this escalation or the rise of the research which is happening. So to try to answer your question, I'm sorry it's been so long, I think that you can't give a blanket answer of how much research needs to be done. The first thing is, who is setting you up? Is it someone who knows you well and knows the other party fairly well? Then I think there can be a certain level of trust to ask some basic questions. But if the other party doesn't know you at all, they're a essentially stranger who's a shadchan professionally, voluntarily, or they ran into you somewhere and decided they have a great idea for you, and they barely know the other party too. And that's obvious by the fact that they're scrolling through whatever list they have and they're just throwing names at you, then more research might be warranted. And even then, what kind of research? I think that you want to make sure that there's an alignment hashkafically, an alignment in life vision, life plans, alignment on where you plan to live and what kind of professional goals or ambitions one has, alignment of a certain level of personality that need to be able to work out. We could get into more specific questions, but I think something which has been lost, and I didn't appreciate before I wrote that article or I would have included it, is a big part of the question of how much research, what kind of research, and to whom to address the research should really begin with. Who is setting you up should determine that.
Okay, so obviously that's critical, who's setting you up. So is there a downside on a high level of doing too much research? Because I once heard from a very respected Rav, you should do 100% research everything in advance before agreeing to go out. But I remember in your article, which I did read, you discussed that downside of being too comprehensive.
Absolutely, there's a downside. First of all, there are things that can't be communicated in words. They're communicated experientially. They're communicated in the language of the heart. They're communicated in emotion. They're communicated in what you perceive. When the waiter spills or confuses your order, when you're frustrated because you can't find a parking spot, when something doesn't go your way, when you walk by someone who needs your help, needs a dollar, when do you hold the door? Do you thank the person who held the door for you? Nobody asks those questions. Those aren't the kind of things that you discover with research. And yet, unplanned and unscripted, spontaneously, those experiences through a period of courtship, whether it's a long courtship or a short courtship, those are the things that draw what are called love maps. Dr. John Gottman, who's widely considered the world expert on healthy marriages, a scientist, a researcher who has studied healthy and unhealthy marriages. He doesn't need my approbation. You could research him, not because he's available to marry, but Dr. John Gottman is a world authority on healthy marriages. And he talks about the significance of love maps. And what he describes is in a period of courtship, the way that relationships are formed is curiosity. You ask questions, you discover about the other. And that adds to another question and you go deeper, a deeper dive. Oh, that's interesting. Well, how did you feel? Or what was that experience? Or how did that impact you? Or tell me more. And you want to discover about one another. An unhealthy relationship, only one party is asking the questions and is curious and the other doesn't reciprocate. Or unhealthy relationships can be very, very superficial. It's that process which creates the sense of love. It creates the bond between the two. He talks about it in the context that often in marriage, one starts to have children, life, expenses, tuition, everything gets in the way. And a couple's no longer drawing love maps, even when they go out, even when they spend supposedly quality time, even when they have date night. It's not to ask questions, to be curious and to learn about one another. It's to go through a checklist of questions they have. So what are we doing this summer? And which camp is the kid going to? And did you renew the passport? And what's happening with? And therefore, a healthy relationship needs a good diet of the love maps. But what I took from his research is that in the courtship and the dating process, the parties themselves need to have some curiosity. If you have a profile, a resume, whatever word you use, and it has everything on it, what do you talk about? What's left to discover? Where's the curiosity? How do you draw any sense of love map? So there's a baseline amount of information that you need in advance. What I would describe is you want to eliminate anything that you would know that you don't want to waste time. You don't want to waste money. You don't want to waste emotional energy. But in terms of beyond the impediments that you want to eliminate or remove, the period or the process of discovery, go out. That's why you're going out. You know, the shadchan's not going to be there when you're married to be able to ask a question. Now that I'm married, you know, this didn't work out or this isn't what I expected. You can ask the shadchan, could you research? Could you find somewhere on the resume or the profile? What flowers am I supposed to bring? What do they like as a gift for an anniversary? So what are you going to do when the shadchan's cut out later? So I think that there is an element of research, but the research is to eliminate what you might know in advance that would have put the gabash on the shidduch. But in terms of discovery, curiosity, and inquiring about the other, that's an absolutely necessary ingredient, and we shouldn't eliminate it or replace it with other parties who shouldn't be part of that process.
Right. So let's get a little bit more granular. Shadchan calls or friend calls, you get a shidduch resume. And we'll talk initially about calling people on the shidduch resume, and then we can talk about calling people who are not on the shidduch resume. So we get the shidduch resume. There are lists of people there. It's friends, it's rabbanim, it's whatever it may be. And you're starting to dial for dollars, right? You're starting to call. When you call up and you get a reference on the phone, do you say who you are? Do you say why you're calling? Or do you just dive right in?
I think it's only respectful. It's a courtesy to say who you are and why you're calling. Why should the party on the other end answer anything with any sense of trust, faith, or confidence if they don't even know to whom they're speaking? So an anonymous phone call, listen, if I got an anonymous phone call that says, Rabbi, you need to know about X, Y, or Z for their own good, and now I have to follow up because that's my responsibility, it's one thing the person wanted to protect their anonymity. But if you're going to ask me to answer your questions, if you want me to divulge, if you want me to speak transparently, then how could I do so to an anonymous person? So I think it's only derech eretz. It's only respectful and it's only a common courtesy to reveal who you are. I wouldn't entertain such a conversation if I didn't know who the other party was.
So I call you up, Rabbi Goldberg. This is Ari Wasserman. I heard about your son. I heard he's a lovely person. I have a daughter. Why don't we discuss this? Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm calling you as a reference. Yeah, calling you as a reference. And I have a daughter who's in the market, or a son. And I hear you know this person. You're on the Shidduch resume. And do you at that point impress upon them the importance of giving accurate, real, honest information, or do you just assume that that's going to happen?
I try to entertain their questions. If it's a question I'm uncomfortable with, then I'll sometimes sidestep it because I don't want to get confrontational. At other times, when it's a question which I think crosses a boundary or is inappropriate, which is pretty much almost every phone call I get, one of those questions comes up, then I'll even give a little bit of pushback. I will say this, there are people I'm referenced for who are extraordinary young men and young women. They all are, and I love them all, and I answer as honestly as I can in trying to communicate their finest attributes. But there are people who are particularly extraordinary. And I have interrupted a series of questions to say, I want you to know, if I had a child in Shidduchim in this age, I would be overjoyed for this person to be my son-in-law or my daughter-in-law. I would be thrilled. Now, if you were asking the questions and you heard that from the Rav, who you're trusting enough at least to call, to me, that would be the end of my questions. If you say he or she is extraordinary, they're bal midos tovos, they daven, they're emuna, they're family, they're this, they're that, everything about them, ala milas, I would say, okay, my questions are done. That's what I needed to hear. You would want your child to marry them? That's what I need to hear. I've never had that happen. Instead, for not everybody, and not most, but there are times that I'll represent that. And the person just goes right back to their script. They're working off a script of questions and they stick with it. And let me say this other disclaimer, and I'm sorry for my long-winded answers, but you called a rabbi, so I'm not sure what you expect. So I apologize in advance, but let me give this other disclaimer. All that I've learned I need to give based on feedback and important dialogue I've had after that article. Again, I'm farthest thing from an expert, just have some common sense and experience on this end of things. Is I've had people say, well, what do you know? You know, how could you comment on a yeshivish world or a truly modern world or the Hasidish world? What is your world that you're in a position to comment? So let me say this. First of all my comments are not on the Hasidish world. The Hasidish system, the Hasidish world, I have no comment, I have no experience, I have no input, I have no influence, and I have nothing to say. But you'd be surprised how much overlap there is these days between the more yeshivish world or the modern yeshivish world here in America and the more modern world in embracing similar practices of resumes, comprehensive resumes, the questions of pictures, the questions of references, the kind of questions that are being asked. You would be surprised how much overlap there is between the worlds. And here is my sort of empirical, anecdotal overview of it. It's not scientific. It's not working. It's not working. The deeper we're digging with our questions, the more comprehensive, the more references we're calling, the more broad the references. Now we're challenging a person's friends and roommates, and we're assuming that people who we wouldn't set up with our children without calling their references can serve as references for their friend, as if they're not going to only say nice things. The deeper we're going, the more questions we're asking. It's not working. It's not working. We've not resolved the challenges. There's not people getting married quicker, easier, better marriages. We've not eliminated breaking up engagements and divorces. The problems are more, not less. The system is broken. It's not working. So we could either have a wholesale look at it and try to tweak it, not suggesting we need to throw it out altogether. We can either tweak the parts that we believe aren't working, or we can keep going down this road where I don't think it's the young men and young women who are the ones who are molding the system. And it's not their parents, and it's not Rabbanim, and it's not Gedolei Yisrael. I won't say who I think it is, but it's not the ones I think who have the most, who are the largest stakeholders, who are the ones who are shaping this system. And my point is, it's not working. It's not working.
Right. So I guess we would say, let's boil it down to the most significant things to check in advance and otherwise go out, is what you're saying. So
correct.
If you were going to choose the most important questions to ask, specific questions to ask. You're calling for your son. You're calling for your daughter. You really don't know the person who's the shadchan. What are the questions that you ask?
What are the questions that you ask? So In that article, I mentioned a few, which I think would be important. Does a person display a simchas achayim? Are they happy and are they positive? Are they an introvert or an extrovert? Do they draw energy by being around others or by being alone? Do they show that they have the capacity to be a mevater? Is this an individual who's able to compromise and sacrifice? Is a person who's able to meet other people's needs, or kind of are they an A-type personality who insists on being in the position of control? Are they a meticulous planner? Or are they go with the flow? Are they spontaneous? There's no judgment on the answer to that question. There's just different personality types. Is it a person who communicates freely, or are they more shy and it's harder to draw them out? Those are some basic questions. I think they reflect a lot of midos. If you ask me, the answers to those questions will infinitely more define whether you'll have a functional and happy marriage than most of the actual reference questions that are asked. And those are kind of healthy questions that I think you know in advance. So that doesn't mean that an extrovert can't have a very happy marriage with an introvert, can't fall in love and find things in common as they draw those love maps. But if you know in advance that this is what I like, that's what the other person likes. If she says, I would never live in Israel, and he says, I'm dying to move to Israel the day I can get married. If he says, I'm going to Rabbanus, and she says, I only want to marry somebody in Chinuch or Klei Kodesh. And he says, that's not me. I'm on the track after years of Kolel, but eventually I'm on the track for law school or real estate or business or whatever the case may be. There are certain questions where you know in advance, even those are surmountable. Even those, there are people who have built beautiful homes and marriages and they've navigated those differences. But I think that those are the kinds of questions that you can ask in advance that you might know the answer to, and they might give you clarity.
Yeah, so when it comes to like research about the family, I know somebody told me he's been set up with, in doing the research, it was four or five girls that he was almost set up with that it turned out the father was in jail. Or there was one that it turned out the father and uncle were pedophiles. Or there's genetic diseases, health issues, physical health, mental health of the person who's being set up, or a family, a genetic issue. When do we find out about those things? Should those be inquired in advance, or do you get that after the fact?
That's a great question. And as I said, when we began, I'm not a posek, and I certainly don't represent any Das Torah. We have poskim. We have poskim for centuries who dealt with those kinds of questions. Prominently among them, the Chafetz Chaim dealt with issues of Lashon Hara within Shiduchim, when things should be disclosed. What's interesting is the more that I've learned and heard feedback from others, even a letter that was printed in Mishpach after the original article, the more clear it is to me that the reference calls are not going to help here. You know why? Because many or most poskim and Rosh Hashiva are telling people with significant issues not to disclose it till the third or fourth date. In some cases, not till ever. I recently spoke to a young man who was diagnosed with bipolar when he was a younger man, who's not on any medication and is leading a functional life. And a prominent Talmud Chacham advised him never disclose that. Not on the third date, the fourth date, not in advance, not in marriage, which I thought was horrific advice, unfair, terrible, and setting up whoever might marry him for disaster. It's inexcusable. It's intolerable, that type of an advice. Now, the question is, when, at what point? And that's where I think if there's a shadchan setting, there has to be disclosure to a shadchan. Shadchan can't be blindsided, and there has to be conversation. At what point something? But as I was saying, is what's fascinating is that poskim and Rosh Yeshiva are advising young people not to disclose things. Some say the fourth date, some say the sixth date. If it gets to that, some say the third date, whatever the number on the date. I'm not hearing poskim advise that it should be in advance. So how are the reference calls helping? If actual poskim and Rosh Yeshiva are telling the subjects themselves, the principals themselves, let alone the references, not to disclose things until into the process, then how are the reference calls going to help? So what I believe, and I've had to deal with this in almost all the examples you just gave, I've had to deal with people who are in Shiduchim. And my answer is that if you're asking me to be a reference and you're putting me down on your resume, or I prefer the word profile or bio, if you're putting me down, then you and I should have a conversation on how you want me to handle that. Let's be on the same page about that. Let's say a young person, Rahman al-Atslan, had a significant disease, had cancer as a teenager or younger, and they're cured. They're healthy. Thank God they're in remission, 5 years or more out. But still, doesn't the other party deserve to know? And there's, I think, a very fair conversation to try to determine, should the other party know that in advance? On a first or second or third date, if you've hit it off, is that when you disclose it in the other party before they have, so to say, totally fallen and they're totally committed, but yet they've come to know you a little bit and say, you know, I don't care. I've researched that. I'm not worried about that. I think we can build a life. I think we can easily build a life together. So those are the types of things that I think with a reference, that conversation should happen in advance so that the reference is not blindsided, trying to navigate for themselves what can they disclose, what they cannot disclose, where is their confidentiality. When I get a phone call and it asks me, what medications are they on or what kind of history of health and mental health do they have? Often I'll say, first of all, I've never been through their medicine cabinet. I don't work at their pharmacy. I've never picked up their prescriptions. So I can't answer. My congregants do not share with me a list of the medications that they're on, A. B, if they did, they didn't do it for me to disclose. There's a confidentiality. There's a trust. There's a responsibility. I'll say to them, does your Rav know what medicines you take or your child? And if they do, are you comfortable with them sharing that, disclosing that? How many milligrams, at what frequency, who was the one who called it in, which insurance do you have? Like what? It's an absolutely unreasonable question to ask. If there's a broader question, which is, are they generally mentally, physically healthy? Is there anything I should know about? I respect that question. I get that question at the end, usually. There's a 20-question inquisition, and then it usually sums up with, is there anything I haven't asked you? Is there anything you know that you believe we should be aware of? That's a fair question. So if somebody's father is sitting in jail and you're going to go pick her up and you're waiting to meet the father, but it turns out that he's not available, that's probably something that you should know before somebody else says something to you. It's a reasonable question. But I, as the reference, before I answer, will have worked out with that family, what are you comfortable? How are you comfortable? What can I communicate? Let's be on the same page. And if the answer is don't disclose that, I may not be comfortable being your reference. If there's something I'm not, let's say that young man I told you about decides I'm going to stick with the advice I received from my Rebbe or my Rosh Hashiva, which is never to disclose it, then I have the shaila. First of all, do I have a responsibility myself to disclose it anyway? It's a halachic shaila. But I may say, well, then you can't include me as a reference because I'm just not comfortable.
Right, right. I think when it comes to the Eitzah, a certain Rosh Yeshiva and saying don't disclose till this date or that date, I'm hoping that we can distinguish between when there's an obligation to actively disclose, and if you don't actively disclose at a certain point, you're over the Isser of Gnevis Das, and when you're asked specific questions and then you don't respond, I would think that there's a higher obligation because that's sheker. That's sheker. When you ask specifically a question, there would be an obligation to respond to a question. If you ask specifically, does he have health issues? Does he have this issue? Does he have... Then I would hope that the Rabbanim, those Rosh Yeshiva that are taking that approach, would say you have to answer that up front if you ask specifically. Otherwise, that's, I think, a different park of being fraudulent in responses.
I agree. I'm not positive, though, and I think it's worth further research because my impression is that they would say, no, you should skirt the issue. And if it's relevant, there's a third or fourth date, that's when it should be disclosed. It could be they're answering only for the young man or young woman, not for the reference, what they're obligated. You may be right. That isn't my impression. But I want to clarify one more thing. There are people with bipolar, with anxiety, with depression, with all kinds of mental health challenges who make amazing husbands and wives and mothers and fathers, who live with beautiful shalom bayis, who are tremendous Ovdei Hashem. There's nothing wrong. It's no one's fault. It's a reality that can be navigated. And there are beautiful, remarkable, amazing people. And there are people whose medicine cabinets are laid bare, who have no prescriptions that they need to have filled, who have no diagnosis to their name, and they are horrific, self-centered, egomaniac, greedy, borderline abusive husbands and wives and mothers and fathers. That's why that question as the barometer, or that question as the chief determinant of whether a shidduch will proceed, in my opinion, is somewhat misplaced. There are families who actually don't receive the diagnosis or don't treat because later in the line, they don't want it to be an impediment in shidduchim. Would you one rather their child marry such a person who's actually not the anxiety today, particularly post-COVID corona? I don't know. I don't know if there's a home who doesn't have someone, a parent or a child, large families especially, who needs a little help with some anxiety, mild anxiety, significant anxiety, severe anxiety, acute anxiety, circumstantial anxiety. Anxiety is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's proliferated. So what should happen now? Should I answer? Yeah, they have some mild anxiety, but you know what? They navigate their life beautifully. It doesn't get in the way, and they're an amazing person. But if you would say that word anxiety, someone's going to hang up the phone. Now their file is going to go in the garbage or go to the bottom of the pile. That person with the mild anxiety, or even more than mild, as I said, could be an amazing husband and wife, patient, selfless, kind, giving, a mevater. They could have all the best qualities in the world. But what, you heard that word and it's going to scare you off? So to a certain degree, we've misplaced our priorities.
Right, right, right. Now, let's go on to talk about people who are not listed on the resume. We've talked about people on the resume, and it could very well be that those are the least helpful people who you're calling, because obviously they were hand-selected, the best friends of the individual, the people that you know are going to say good things about you, the best friends of the parents. So how do we go about, can we go about calling people not on the list? Are there any halachic, ethical, moral problems with dialing for dollars and trying to find the people who may have the best, quote-unquote, best, dirtiest information that we can get? Because effectively, that what's going on here when you're trying to research somebody is you're trying to find out the problems, not trying to find out, you know, good stuff also, but like, what are the issues? So do we go about doing that? And if so, how do we go about doing that?
Well, let's go back to the assumption in that question. The assumption in the question is that the goal of doing some research is everyone has a skeleton in the closet. Everyone has something bad. Let me find out what it is about this person and let me know whether it's a deal breaker. Why would we begin this from a position of negativity? Why should we start this from the assumption of guilt? Why are we researching the skeletons? Instead of suggesting that, you know, I was told wonderful qualities about the individual, let me go discover more for myself. And yes, there is an assumption, ain't sadik, but nobody's perfect. We're all imperfect. We're all fallible. That's what we navigate in relationships. We complement one another. That's what we're figuring out. That's what we're trying to work on. So, you know, is that the goal? Are we detectives? Are we going to try to uncover and reveal to the world what's wrong with the family, the person, some extended relative? If you ask me, the best thing to do is if a suggestion is made, if someone's read a shidduch, if you have anyone in common, find that person. Because I'll go back to, again, the way we began. If you really want to know, is this worth my time? Then spend a little time trying to figure out, do we have anyone in common? If we have someone in common, that person is positioned best to say, Nu, do you see this? Is this a good use of time? Is this worthwhile? It's a short question. It's a short conversation.
Right. Rabbi Goldberg, I want to thank you so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Joining us now is Mrs. Lisa Twersky. Mrs. Twersky is a well-known psychotherapist and author, a lecturer, especially in the areas of dating and marriage. In fact, she has a podcast of her own, Creating Kesher, which is creating good connections in marriage. She is also on the board of directors of Nefesh International. Mrs. Twersky, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Mrs. Twersky, I've read some of your writings on this topic, and they're fascinating. And when you speak with different people, advisors, shadchanim, maybe not shadchanim, but advisors, rabbanim, parents, there's a real spectrum of views on how much research should be done before the boy and the girl meet. And some people say, research everything 100% should be done. And then it's just the last step. They meet to see if they like each other, but otherwise everything should be done in advance. And others say we are getting in the way of what could be an important relationship effort on behalf of the two people getting to know each other. So where do you fall out on that spectrum?
Well, I don't think that research or a lot of research precludes a couple from then doing their own investigating as to how it feels to be in a relationship, so to speak, or in relation to this other person. I don't think that all the research in the world will tell me how it feels to be relating to someone else. There's something about that that is different when we come together to see how we relate to each other, or can we relate to each other just because the paper, you know, everything on paper worked out well. I think in terms of the effort that's done, obviously you don't want to put two people together who aren't in the ballpark, but I don't think that you can replace the understanding or the knowledge that you gain by being with the other person and getting to experience what it's like to be in relation to them, especially when you're talking about, you know, there's all different kinds of, you know, areas of compatibility, but especially in terms of emotional compatibility, what does it feel like and how do we work or not work well together really is sort of a first person account that needs to be experienced by the actual people.
Right. So certainly you need to meet, you need to check chemistry, right? Chemistry.
Right, that's a separate, also important issue, definitely.
And emotional chemistry, you also have to check biology.
Right.
We have to check the sciences, the general basic sciences have to be checked. But in advance of agreeing to that next step, what should be checking? And I'd like to know, practically speaking, what are people checking and are they missing out on anything?
Right. So I think that the ones that are sort of checked on regularly are things like spiritual compatibility, meaning are we in the same hashkafic ballpark? Are we of the same type, so to speak, and all of the, you know, on the religious spectrum? Are we looking to go to the same, you know, are we heading in the same direction? Things like intellectual compatibility, not necessarily smarts or only smarts, but what do we like? What do we not like? What do we have in common? Interests, et cetera. How do we like to spend time? Familial compatibility, how are our families? Are our families compatible? Or if that's important, are our families compatible? In what ways? Do we have similar ideas of family and family roles, et cetera? I think these are things that are all being checked that are important. I think in this day and age, there's a lot more understanding that midos are important, which is separate than areas of compatibility. Areas of compatibility are really about fit as a type, as in two people, do we fit together? And then midos are sort of what everyone really needs to have a good marriage. And I think people do ask about midos. I think that sometimes people need help figuring out how to get that information in a real way, not just in a figure of speech way. She's an amazing girl. She has great midos. He is such a nice guy. You know, people need help kind of figuring out how do I bring that down to earth? How do I get to the details of that? And then related, I think one of the things that isn't talked about as much or is not as understood about how to investigate is emotional compatibility. You know, things like laid back versus intense versus, you know, happy-go-lucky versus quiet and serious versus, you know, the things about how we're going to relate or how we're going to handle each other and life's challenges and work together. I don't know, because it's so much less concrete. We could talk about, are they going to wear this or wear that? Are they going to have family like this or is their family like that? The things that we talk about are the ones that are more concrete because they're easier to talk about when they're defined and concrete, and sort of the emotional area about how they work together or how what their type is emotionally and how they operate, I think is less explored and less discussed because it's a little bit more esoteric.
Right. Okay. So let's unpack this. You mentioned midos, which is discussed, but it sounds like not well. And then you mentioned emotional compatibility, which maybe we're missing, and character, which we're missing. So let's go start with midos. I've called on behalf of relatives. Relatives come sometimes call me and ask, can you help me check out XYZ person? And obviously you ask, does the person, or not obviously, but you ask, does the person have good midos? And the answer is always, this boy has the best midos in the world. You're not going to believe it. And then I'd say, can you give any example of that? And they'd say, well, he has the best midos. And does he pick up his laundry? Does he put his soap back in the shower? And then they think you're crazy that you're asking questions like that. But in any case, how do we drill down on, does the person have good midos? Because to me, what I've seen is that when you're calling the friends we're talking about in particular, when you're talking, right, calling the friend, their view of good midos is somebody that speaks to them and schmoozes with them. So, you know, he's a great schmoozer. Does he have good midos? He schmoozes. So I once asked about a boy, I was saying, so what interest does he have in hobbies? What does he do during Ben Hasmanim? And the answer kept being, he's a great schmoozer. I said, well, what hobbies does he have? The only hobby that I can think about is he's a good schmoozer. So to me, I had never heard of a hobby as a schmoozing, but to me, they right. have a definition. What is midos is just somebody that is a friend of mine. So how do we drill down on that to find out if the person has good midos.
Right. Well, you know, I think that, you know, probably more with boys than with girls, because girls are given this language. They grow up with this language, they're given this language, and it's brought into their educational system much more. The girls will have chesed projects and they'll have midos or chesed asifas. It's in their vernacular, it's in their language. And so they probably, because of that, have an easier time being descriptive when they're then asked, you know, about friends. It's already in the air with them. They are given classes on this. They're given binyan abayis classes in seminary. They have the language. And so I think if you're asking boys about, let me start with, I think that whenever you're asking, my question is, if somebody uses a term or an umbrella description or a specific term, like, oh, he's very strong, I'm always going to ask, what are you thinking of when you say that? It sounds like you're thinking of something specific, especially with a term like strong, which could sound or be not so good. You want to know, am I dismissing this person because they were called strong, but he literally meant strong? He lifted my bed for me when it fell through the da da da. I don't know. Or is he mean strong, like even though he was placed in a, you know, whatever camp bunk where the kids were, whatever, he made friends and that kind of strong, or he's got to have his way. When we were divvying up the rooms, he wouldn't budge until he didn't get his. So you always want to ask if a person uses a term, whether it's a good term or a bad term, good midos. What are you thinking of when you say that? He's so considerate. What are you thinking of when you say that? Because you might hear actual consideration and you might hear somebody just trying to say the right thing. And when you ask for an example, they have no example. Or it kind of comes out that the example is something about not consideration, but self-centeredness.
Right. So when it comes...
Yeah, go ahead.
When it comes to midos, it's drill down further. Get detail around what they're saying.
Right. And then in the situation like you describe, where you're saying, well, he's a great schmoozer, well, you might need to ask more specific questions. Do you ever see him do favors for people? Do you ever see him go out of the way for people? When was a time you might have seen him do something, you know, for somebody else? Or put somebody before himself, or take somebody into consideration, or let something go for the benefit of a group. There are things to ask to try and get, not just, you don't want to hear, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You want to hear, okay, so when? Because are you just covering for your friend? Because now I asked the leading question, so you're going to say yes, yes, yes. But I want to hear then an example that tells me you're not just saying yes, 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 but you've actually seen it because you could tell me a story. So
right.
You might have a term thrown out at you that you say, tell me what you mean or what you're thinking about when you say that. Or it might be because I'm not getting enough information, I need to ask more specific questions, but then I don't want just a yes answer. I want now to hear a story about how you're agreeing that this person knows how to put other people first. Like when, like what? Like where, like why?
So
it's not leaving it at the you know, lip service. It's I want details. Right.
So let's move on to emotional compatibility. This is more amorphous and intangible, and yeah. We're still talking about doing inquiries in advance of dating, right? We're still talking about before dating. And right. What you said was this is the type of what is their emotional build. If we could say that he's right. Intense, she's laid back. And it could very well be that if they're that extremely different, everything else could check out on paper. But if their personalities don't mix, don't jive, this is not going to work.
Right.
So how do we make that inquiry? Do we just say, is he intense? What's, you know, on the intense, non-intense, intense scale, 1 to 10, how do we go about checking out is it the emotional compatibility?
Right. So I think it's probably really like a three-step process. First, we need to back up and say, have I asked myself not only what I am, but what I need? Because what I am might be what I need. I want and am good with and work best with the same as me. Or what I want and need is the balance to me. So first I need to say, wait, where do I fall on these things? Like, where am I? And then look at my best relationships where I feel the best and have the healthiest or most fulfilling relationships, friendships in my life. Are those people tend to be more similar in these ways or more different in these ways? When I'm feeling distressed, I really like somebody who is intense with me, or I really do well when I'm with the person that knows how to kind of just, or just naturally is more chilled and laid back about something. I really am bored with somebody who is all the time calm, or I am soothed by being around somebody who is pretty much all the time calm. So first I have to start with me. Then I can sort of have that start of a picture of the type that I'm looking for. And you can make the general inquiries and maybe ask for some, you know, questions or specifics. But honestly, in this area, it's really more the one-on-one that tells you, because other people's emotional experience, you can get the general, you know, yes, I see this person as very upbeat and happy, and they seem to always have a smile on their face. They're really, you know, very gentle and kind, or they're really very strong and passionate, or whatever it is. But ultimately, in terms of the feel of it inside that interaction with them, is something that happens when you are with the person and you share something emotional. And I don't mean you have to tell your deepest, darkest secrets. I don't mean that you have to be farther along or more open than is appropriate or comfortable. But when I say, oh, I was really upset about something, 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 or when you ask me my opinion and I say it's so uncomfortable for me to tell such and such and such, when I share in an emotional way, let's put it that way, I get to then have some sense of what are you actually like in your interactions. You've been described as very laid back or very intent or very kind. And now I've shared something. What do I really get? Do I get dismissiveness? Do I get interest? Do I get presence? Do I get obliviousness? Do I get, you know, wow, I get it. Or just a kindness, or a big deal, you know, a sort of an insensitivity. What do I get? What does it feel like to share emotionally? And that can, you know, is super limited in terms of how much investigation you can do outside of the interaction between these two people.
Uh-huh. So we want to try to investigate up front, certainly midos, facts, even as much as chemistry we can. But when it comes to dating, we want to certainly validate and build on understanding emotional compatibility and character that we heard about beforehand. Was it accurate? Was it not accurate? And trying to delve further into if this is really going to work or not.
Right. And the barrier to that is that, you know, everyone wants to just either A, you know, be kind and upbeat and not say, oh, I was really hoping we could whatever, or, oh, I didn't want, or what winds up happening is that anything I have a question or a concern about, it's not that I'm going to hold it in, but I'm going to have somebody else find out for me. So I'm going to have the shadchan find out if you meant when you said X or Y or Z, is that what you really meant? Or, you know, did you mean it completely? Or did, as opposed to say, you know, I wasn't sure when you said X or Y or Z, when you said that you want to, you know, I don't know, you want to learn for a couple years. Did you mean that literally? Did you, I want to find out from the Shadchan what you meant, as opposed to what you could find out from the Shadchan. But when I have the opportunity to ask you what you meant, and we sort of have to navigate that together, that tells me what it feels like to be in a relationship with you, or to be in relation with you. How are we going to navigate life together? What, you know, what are we gonna, what is it going to look like when we have to deal with something? If you said, I want to know, you know, this thing happened on the last date and I was just curious what that was about, I get to see, do you get angry or frustrated? Do you get concerned or interested? Do you handle it in this way or in that way? There's what to find out about the person by addressing things directly. And
make it real.
Make it beyond the investigation. Investigating and information gathering is great, but do I know what it's like to work with, deal with, be with you in the real world, so to speak, or in the relational world, happens only if I either share something or if I sort of confront, and I don't mean this in an aggressive way, confront something, say something, am honest about something. That's the moment where I see your kindness or your, you know, both your midos, your kindness or your dismissiveness, let's say. And I also get to see, are you intense and, you know, anxious about it? Or are you calm and even about it? What are you like? That's not really something that's as investigatable beforehand.
Right. Is the person empathetic, sympathetic, sensitive? That's only going to come out when it's a real conversation dealing with real issues, not discussing facts. So let's move on to discuss something really on my mind, second marriages.
Okay.
So you're doing research, and obviously the first thing that comes to mind, if a spouse had passed away, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a divorce case.
Yeah.
And obviously on your mind is what happened? Was somebody at fault? Is this a red flag? How do we go about researching that? Do we ask the person directly? Obviously, we're going to want to ask other people. Should we call the ex-spouse and find out? Obviously, it's going to be ugly. Maybe that's not a good idea because you're only going to get bad information, maybe bad information, negative information, even if it wasn't the person's fault. So how do we go about dealing with a divorcee that we're trying to research?
Right. So I think that you have, I mean, it's hard to imagine in our community, anybody not doing that information gathering. I think that because the people are usually a bit older, more mature, been through the world, they might feel that they don't want to spend hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours on research before meeting the person for one time, because maybe we're going to open the door and go and have a conversation and then go, oh, this is never going to click. And now I just spent 4 weeks of my life researching the person. So maybe I do a bit and then I meet the person. This is a common kind of occurrence. I do a bit. So it has to sound like within reason. And then I meet the person and then I go back and maybe do more. Some people do it like that rather than all of the information up front, which is more typical. Not that people stop completely asking information once a shidduch is going forward first time around, but usually you're going to do the vast majority up front. And that has to do with age and stage and all of that. But wherever you do, whatever point you're doing the investigation, I think most people are going to really try as best as possible to get a range of voices weighing in on what happened. And that'll sometimes include the other side in some capacity. Calling the ex directly is probably done the least often, but family members sometimes, and certainly people involved in the get, are often the ones that are called, the Rav, the Dayan, the Tohen, the sometimes people want to get information from the therapist. I have a very big problem with this. If somebody wants to speak to me about a client and that client is someone I'm still seeing, I think that that's really intrusive. Even if the client wants it, because everyone wants to speak to the therapist involved, but you know, it's whatever. I find that a little intrusive to the therapy, but there are people to ask and to get a general sense. And again, there's a difference between somebody who doesn't have the midos or mental health to make a good spouse, and then somebody who is just not going to make a good spouse for me, but could make a good spouse for somebody else. But they and their spouse were just miserable with each other. And sometimes it could be hard to tell the difference. And you do need the weigh-in of, you know, outsiders who have perspective, who aren't just trying to get you remarried and who have some perspective and some maybe experience in this to help you navigate between when is it really incompatibility and when is it really that midos, mental health, stay away regardless, you know, of other stuff, of other positive stuff that you might hear. It can be hard to navigate, but in the other sense, you know, you do have something to investigate, meaning you have a relationship to investigate that could tell you what kind of spouse they might be, as opposed to first time around, there's no one that could answer you really about what kind of husband or wife they're going to be, because they haven't been.
Right. So, one last question for you. When it comes to making shidduch inquiries, obviously Hasidim, it depends on which Hasidim, but they have a different process. Shorter, it could be one meeting, it could be a couple, whatever the process is. Does that make research all the more important up front, or is there simply not enough research done?
Well, I think that what the bigger change maybe, or difference, not change or difference is that there's a ton of research done up front, much more, I don't know if much more so, but certainly more heavily relied upon, because the getting to know you process is smaller. You know, you skip over, let's say in the yeshivish world, where you'll have a few dates about getting to know you, or just very superficial, very, you know, more about pleasantries and small talk. And you're going to cut all that out in the Hasidic system, where you're getting a feel for the person, but you're going right away to tochen and seriousness. And so there is, because of that shortened period, there is a huge amount of reliance on the investigation. But also remember that the parents get to have a feel of this person. And so the piece that I'm talking about in terms of what it's like to be with this person is done in some ways, at least partially, is done by the parents, because it's the parents who get to sit and it's the parents who get to interact also, not instead of, because the couple's still meeting, but they are also going to be sort of, as part of their investigation, they're going to be looking at that themselves. The thing that I said about the emotional compatibility can only be very generally investigated or checked, and then it's really between the couple. That checking is in the Hasidic system is not just between the couple, because the parents kind of get to sit and have a feel for this person and get to ask and get to hear and get to navigate to some degree. So that to me is also a difference.
That is a big difference. It may decrease compatibility with the husband, but hopefully it increases compatibility with the in-laws.
Right. Well, you know, it depends on maybe how well you know your kid or how much of a conversation you have with your child about what's important to them and what they feel they need and what their relationships need to be like and what relationships or qualities in somebody they appreciate the most and want to sit with and want to feel, so that when you're sitting with this potential in-law child, you have a roadmap of what you know you want to be experiencing with them.
Right. Wow. Very interesting. Mrs. Tversky, I want to thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.